I knew that I had to level up my knowledge base. I had to level up my communication skills. And I just had.
Legends of Athletics, and today I have another special guest here with me. I have Coach Phil DeRue. I hope I'm saying it correctly. He is a top trainer within the MMA ranks, within, I guess I say the US. I'm not sure about the world, but I know the US for sure. He trains not only MMA fighters but celebrities as well, and he's very thorough in what he does. And so whenever I get a guest on, one thing that I like to do is make sure that I'm making sure this person is somebody of quality, and that is somebody that was going to give you guys good nuggets to follow and good training tips, as well as life advice and things of that nature. And so, Coach Giroux, I'm excited to have you, and I'll let you go into a little bit about yourself and give us a little introduction of yourself as well.
Okay, so quick introduction. I've been doing this for about 15 years. So I've been a strength and conditioning coach, performance coach, whatever you want to call it, for 15 years now. Started working with an individual by the name of Tony Montgomery out of a small, I would say somewhere around 1900 square foot facility. I ended up saying, all right, I needed to work on my own. I needed to build my own space. So ended up opening up an 800 square foot storage closet at 22 years old. At the same time, I was a professional fighter. So I was competing in MMA and also trying to be a coach and a trainer and also build my business. So fast forward more, ended up getting a full-time opportunity to work with MMA fighters, UFC guys, along with my teammates over at American Top Team. Was there for 5 years, built the brand, built the business. Now I own three different gyms around the South Florida area, but primarily my goal at this moment in time, being in the sport, being in the industry for 15 years, now giving back to other coaches, coaching coaches that want to get into this world, right? Want to get into either, strength and conditioning, athletic development, and also with seminars. I teach a lot of seminars. I teach a lot of courses online too as well. So that's really where the focus is. But like I said, I was blessed to be able to work with so many like-minded individuals, so many world champions now, celebrities, because of the fact that I felt I had passion for this particular field, right? And that's the biggest thing that I tell coaches is like, you gotta have the passion, you gotta want to help people, and you gotta always want to constantly get better and learn more. So my life is a constant, progression in a lot of ways. And there's gonna be ups and downs, there's gonna be undulations, but at the same time, as long as you're trying and learning new things every day, you're never going to be where you were a year ago, which is important. Every year you want to get better. Every year you want to improve. So that's where I'm at right now.
It's about improvement. Constant improvement is the biggest thing. I know, like me as a coach, I previously had Coach Beckham on the podcast, and he's a speed and agility coach. He's at Mississippi State University now. But talking with him and interviewing him, and also having a chance to be around him and be around some other coaches, really allowed me the space to not only see where I could improve, but also glean and take some nuggets from those guys to improve as well. And so I think in the world of coaching, as with anything, it's always about you constant evolution and constant want to learn. I think a lot of times today we miss learning opportunities because we're looking for a variety, or we're searching for a variety and things of that nature, but we're not being consistent on the things that work. And sometimes you can get so caught up in variety that you forget what works and what doesn't work, in a sense.
Very true. Yeah. Justin, how long have you been coaching?
So I've been in the training game for 9 years. In April it'll be 10 years. So I've been in it for 9 years, here in Mississippi.
Nice. And when did you decide to start doing podcasting?
So for me, podcasting was something that I did initially, just as a hobby. I started back, I think it was 2015 or 2016. I did it as a hobby. And then after that, I kind of jumped into it full time this past year, because it was just something I said, like, well, I think it works for me, not only to learn and teach others, but also teaching myself. And then it's something I like to do. And so this year really was the first year I just kind of jumped into a full swing. But outside of that, I kind of just did it like as a hobby. So you, if you go back in the catalog, you'll see some years where I did like 3 or 5 episodes, and then some where I was like really on it. So yeah, it's been a while, but this is probably the most consistent I've been.
So no, I like to see that because I like to see what other coaches have been through, what other trainers, you know, what they've done in the past mm-hmm. and got them where they're at, and why they decided to go this route on putting out content, right? Because that's a big thing with mm-hmm. a lot of trainers. They're reluctant to actually put out positive content and things that we know that are going to help others, because mm-hmm. maybe they feel like they're not, you know, they don't want to be in the limelight, or they don't want to big themselves up. But at the end of the day, the goal is to help educate others, right? And mm-hmm. pass it on. So I always like to see coaches that have been in the trenches get on and actually do content and give the experiences and the information that they have available for them to others. So this is really good that you're.
And I'll add this too, man. You just said something key. To me personally, man, with the content, I'm gonna be real, like from a coach that's like a smaller creator right now and climbing the ranks, you know, with getting traction and things. I think with coaching, what you can get lost in the sauce in is like, me personally, I don't like to watch a lot of other people's stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch a little bit, but then you can watch so much of it that either you're going to get super self-critical of what you do, or mm-hmm. you're going to be saying, well, I don't communicate it that way, I don't say it that way, or do it that way, so my stuff isn't as great. And then, like, once it gets to the point of, like, having teams, like you said, you start off in a small box gym. Some people are like, I know I don't have a gym, and I kind of work remotely or work wherever I can. You know, some people get into it like, oh, man, I don't even have a space, so I can't do X, Y, and Z. But content is just, you can't get around it these days. Like, I'm going to say 10 years ago, whenever I done it, I got in, it was still relatively new. Like, the sports performance space was next to untouched. Like, it was a few people out there putting out content, but most of it was like, I follow Chris Jones back in the day. I still follow him now, like this stuff. Chris Jones. Like bodybuilding stuff, they had most of it was saturated with bodybuilding content, and you didn't really have a lot for athletes, so to speak. And so, to me, man, that's just something that you got to do these days, and you got to just put your best foot forward. We're all not going to look the same. Some people are larger frames, some people have smaller frames, some people are ripped, some people are not. But I'll say this, at the end of the day, if you know, not being grotesquely overweight and stuff like that, but like I'll say this, if you know your information, you know your stuff, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. And then it's just applying and implementing it and executing it at the highest level. I think though we have algorithms today, I think the people that execute at the highest level, mostly, even though you can have, you do have some people who don't necessarily aren't as knowledgeable or whatever, slip through the cracks. I think those that execute at the highest level are the mm-hmm. ones that you see. And that kind of goes to the 80-20 thing. You're going to see those top 20% excel, and 80% like that aren't really teaching or aren't coaching or doing it for real, you're not gonna see those people. So I want to say that part, I agree with you on that.
You said you're in Mississippi, right?
Mm-hmm.
How's that scene out there in Mississippi from just like a sports performance standpoint?
Man, it's like if I could compare it, it's kind of like it's like discovering an untouched island or something. It's very, Mississippi itself is rural. I grew up here. It's rural, so it's not as what we call cities. Y'all probably look at it and be like, man, that's a town. But it's a smaller community, so it's rural. But it's one of those things where it's growing. I think it's somebody has to find a blue ocean, right? Yes. I don't know if you ever heard of Blue Ocean Theory or read the book about blue oceans and stuff like that. And that's what I'm trying to do. But it's about really having something concrete and not being the same as everybody else. Not saying that you go against the grain and we flipping off buildings and stuff. But I think when you're really talented and you're really thorough at what you do, you can show people that pain point, one. And two, you can execute, like I said, going back to execution. And get results from people. Now, we're not going to have we don't have professional teams or anything like that, but there is a need and a space for it if you're talented at it. I go back to something that you said about branding and stuff, right? So when I first got in the game in 2014, this wasn't even called Legends of Athletics. The name was called Geek Physiques, and I got it from I got it from Chris Jones. He was Physiques of Greatness at the time, and so I was like, man, that's kind of, sound kind of cool. So I went with Geek Physiques. So and we eventually moved to doing more sports based stuff, and the name just didn't match the brand. And so that's when we rebranded in 2019 and became Legends of Athletics LLC, and kind of went on and moved on from there. It's definitely been hard. I mean, in Mississippi, let's face it, we got the financial part one, and then two is like you said, just getting people to buy in. But one thing that I have realized and learned is it's really the mindset that you take to it, right? So one mindset you can take and say, you know, well, people really don't have it, or, you know, I'm an RA trainer, but I can't get this guy, like you said, in Alabama, I can't get this guy over here, over there. But then it's like when you reframe and reshift your focus and you reframe what you're thinking about and you really put it one to paper, but put it into practice, you attract different things to you. You attract the right athletes to you. You attract those opportunities and things like that to you. I'll say this because it's been crazy. I don't know how much you deal with mindsets and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one thing to think like an athlete and, you know, you think push, you think go beyond what I'm capable of and things like that. But it's another thing in your everyday life when you have to pattern interrupt maybe those negative thoughts, pattern interrupt the things that you feel like are self-limiting and what you can do. And I'll say that because of this, right? And you may say this is funny. You may say it's kind of woo-woo. But I feel like I attract this podcast and attract you on it because a couple months ago, one thing I said, man, the one thing I want to do in my podcast, and I'm saying this out loud, I'm not going to say every goal I got for it, but one thing I said, well, I'm going to take this thing serious because I think it's something that's great. One, because a lot of times with strength coaches and sport and performance, we're a lot of the unsung heroes, the guys that don't get talked about a lot, kind of in the background. It take you having 16, and I'm saying this figuratively, 16 five-star clients. And then somebody was like, oh, yeah, man, he trains with such and such. This guy's great. And so it's giving a voice to those people, but then helping people understand the importance of your foundation and your training. And so I just decided to do things differently and say, hey, I'm gonna take a chance. It's not an opportunity that every person's gonna respond, every person's gonna jump on this and that, whatever. But I'm gonna take that chance because I feel like I'm just as good as others. You know what I'm saying? I feel like this can be just as great as others, no matter where your geographic location is. Yeah. And you know, even speaking on trainers, you know, I thought about you know, think about people like Custy Amato and things like that, and how that one person shifted Mike Tyson's whole career. Because I'm one of the people, and you may think, again, this is kind of funny, I don't think he's ever beaten if Cus never dies. Like, that's in my mind. I feel like that. It could be wrong, but that's from a person I'm not even close to him. But I just say all that to say, like, mindset, giving people a voice, and then, like you said, just separating myself and showing that it's something different and the importance of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in any case of a coach-athlete relationship, there's going to be some level of psychology that goes into it, right? There's mental on, and in my sport with fighting, you know, they always say it's like 90% mental, right? So giving them confidence and giving them positive affirmations and setting out, you know, attainable goals that are obviously hard to do, but again, they're attainable. I think that, you know, with that, it comes to the point where you have to know the individual. And so I do like to run certain personality tests to actually see what I'm working with, right? And then obviously you have a full on, you know, you have some level of communication every day with that individual. But down and talking to them even outside of the weight room, right? Because it's different, right? If you can get them, you know, in a comfortable space, maybe when you first start working with them, I usually take about 60 to 90 minutes to sit down with the individual and talk with them and see exactly what their true aspirations are, right? And at times it may take you to go outside that gym, maybe take them to lunch or dinner or whatever, and figure out, or her, and figure out what their true aspirations are, what their goals, what is their vision for the future. And then from there, it kind of can dictate how I actually train that person. It can dictate how I communicate with that person. And I have fighters that work with me, and I've coached for well over 7 years, you know, just because we've had this this bond. It, actually, one of my athletes, Maureen Shea, who's at this podcast, an assistant of mine, but she's a 2-time world champion boxer. She's been working with me for 7-8 years, you know. So
first of all, hey, shout out to Miss Shea. She is on it. She is she's great. We had a miscommunication last week about the podcast time, and she was like, "Oh, I thought it was this week." And man, she's great. So I just wanted to make sure everybody heard that she's phenomenal.
Well, that's another thing. Like, that's why I like to have most of my fighters, you know, once they're done with their career or in the tailor end of the career, like, do we give them opportunities to work in the system a little bit and work with us? Because they know the system per se. Like, they know the methods, they know the training, they know how I work, they know how, you know, how things are adapted and approved based on what I see for the future. But also, they're very diligent, right? They know how to hold a schedule. And so with Maureen, she's very diligent, right? She's my operator, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to be that at a high level. So there's some common themes and some characteristics that high level people have. And it could be, you know, they take that into their athletic career, and then they take that into their professional career after the fact. Like, if you look at Shannon Sharp, right? He's highly successful now. Great podcast, great show, right? But he was a great football player, right? Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. But at the end of the day, Kobe was on a trajectory. Like, he was going to be a phenomenal businessman because he put in the effort, the same amount of effort he did and he took in the NBA. He was going to do that in the business world. The same thing with Michael Jordan and so on and so forth. So if you look at that, there's some commonalities and there's some transitions that can go about it. As long as you can get that and you understand it from talking to that individual and seeing what their strengths are, not just their skill set, but their God-given talent. And that way you can show them the way, not just from a performance standpoint or from a physical performance standpoint, but also just in life in general, you know?
Right. And I think kind of what you're alluding to is, like, success leaves clues. You know, if a person is successful at the young age and successful at every level they go to, you can bet that they're going to continue being successful. When it comes down to, you know, the mentality of a fighter, I'll say this for me personally, I've always looked at fighters as, like, y'all cut from a different cloth, because I could not wake up and go and fight somebody with no sense of animosity and say, I'm going to do it for sport. Like, hey,
make it even worse. They become your best friends, right?
Yeah.
They're closest with you, right?
That's just a different mindset. But I will say this is, like, you know, you talk about mindsets and digging into the mindset of an athlete. I think that in coaching, sometimes we can get so caught up in the numbers and so caught up in the financial side of it, which is what you have to be caught up in, and to a sense, that you forget the person that you're coaching. And so me, I think that's something that has helped me be successful with athletes that I've trained, is because with coaching, and you know this, some athletes respond to being called out in front of the group. Some respond to you challenging them, and some respond to you giving them love in a position that it looks like ships are burning around them. But you don't know that if you don't have that dialogue with that athlete or develop that relationship with the athlete. If it's pure training, you'll get the drills, you'll get the skills, things like that, the technicalities and things, but you have to know the person, and the person is what's going to make everything work. I say this quite often, everything works. Literally, everything works, but they work if you work the person. If you work with the person, then once they buy into your system, you're good. Yep. They don't buy into you, they're not going to buy into your system, and it's all for nothing. And so I think that was a real good thing. So let me ask you this. I don't know how you start off as a trainer. Did you ever go through a period of, the struggle, or, you know, having to really believe in yourself before the people came, or before you started seeing the work pay off, or how was that for you?
A little bit of both. So, like, when I started training people, I started sneaking people into, like, Gold's Gym and just trying, like for, like, $20 a head. And this was probably, I was, like, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
I was in college, and, like, my goal was to, like, really just make a life for myself outside of also fighting, you know. But I think what ended up happening was that I started to really understand how to get people enthusiastic and motivated to actually train and inspired to train, not just from a results standpoint, like they knew they were going to get results, but also mm-hmm. like being there, like actually adopting the training philosophy and the training life, the lifestyle, right. Or like as you're going through your fitness journey, and this is just general population, this isn't even athletes at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Giving them the understanding that this isn't just something that you do for a weekend, or this isn't something that you're going to do, you know, for summer. This is like this is a lifestyle change. And so when we decided to get to those individuals and put together a culture per se and a community, I was able to do that. And I was always able to do that as a young kid. Like even growing up, you know, I was always the one to knock on doors and get people to come out, kids to come out and play football. Mm-hmm. Or get kids to come out play manhunt or something like that. So I've always been a person that was able to lead people in the right direction in a lot of ways. And I just carried over. And so when I started to work with athletes, my goals were to get better as not only a communicator, but also to understand the ins and outs, the skills of actual mm-hmm. training, get them into a better position to be successful as an athlete. You know, I've always been interested in learning, you know, from Tudor Bumpa to Yuri Verkhoshansky to Mel Siff to even Louis Simmons. I was always immersed into learning the actual ways to progress an individual, right? There was right. always a plan of action that was there. Some days were more, you know, auto-regulatory. Some days were planned. And some days I needed to make sure that I had those progressions set for that individual. But for the most part, I was always constantly trying to evolve. And I still am to this day.
Mm-hmm.
There was a turning point in my career when I did get the opportunity to work with higher level people. Now, I don't say people, but athletes in that sense, where right. they were at the highest level of their sport in the UFC. So when I started working with Dustin Poirier and Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Tisha Torres and these individuals, and I say their names just so that you can see the level of competition and that right. level they're at, I knew that I had to level up my knowledge base. I had to level up my communication skills, and I just had to work harder, right? And I had to put in the effort each and every day. And I'm constantly trying to find new ways to get someone better, right? And a lot of times you have to go outside of your scope of practice, right? And start learning on, like we talked about, is the psychological factor, right? So mm-hmm. there's a lot of psychology that goes into getting somebody prepared for a fight, right?
Right.
It takes a certain type of crazy for an individual to step into a cage or a ring half naked and fight somebody. You know what yeah. I'm saying? I had to learn how to reframe those particular aspects of training from a science-based perspective and then show them that this can work based off of experience on my own mm-hmm. and then also the data that proves that it has validity, right?
Right.
The biggest thing was like trial and error, finding out what works, what doesn't work. And I had to crack a few eggs, right? Mm-hmm. So there's where I was like, yeah, that's too much volume. Yeah, that's too much frequency. Yeah, that's too much intensity. Yeah, mm-hmm. we have to crack this off. That program's not going to work. You know, I tried everything possible. And so it took me 5, maybe 6 years to really, really hone in on the details, but I'm still evolving, right? Now we're functional health where these guys, especially the ones that are veterans, you know, they're training and they're fighting and they're cutting weight for so many years, they tend to fall into metabolic damage and they tend to fall into hormonal issues going down, you know, into the later years of their life. So mm-hmm. now I have to find out ways to combat that. And that has to do with supplementation, that has to do with proper nutrition, not just weight cutting and not just keeping them at a weight class, but also making sure that they're healthy and they're putting in the proper nutrients to keep them not just performing well, but also health and longevity after the mm-hmm. fact. You know, and then obviously getting them more powerful, getting them stronger, but throwing in some cognitive conditioning, right? Throwing in some things that from a mental standpoint that can not only get them better from a performance standpoint, but also, again, allow them to expand their mind and create higher thought processes so that when they do get out of the sport, they're ready and prepared to do whatever they can. Maybe be, you know, a CEO of a company or so on and so mm-hmm. forth. And then also it's good to combat a lot of the physical attributes that they have to attain, or a lot of physical training that they have to attain, by doing something more mental, right? So they can train, but they're not beating their bodies up.
Right.
So those things are something that I put into place down the line. And obviously I acquired some of the specialists around the way so that, again, I don't want to be the guy that knows everything. I just want to make sure that I'm assembling a team that can put together the best possible outcome for that individual.
Definitely the proof is in the pudding. I mean, 5-time MMA was a trainer of the year.
That speaks
for itself.
Thank you.
I mean, and I think that, you know, MMA to me, and it may be because I'm not familiar as familiar with it as like we said before, as like the niche of like football and basketball. But to me, MMA is just one of those things that it's mixed martial arts, but it's also mixed training. Like, you have to know so many principles in order to make a fighter tip top shape. I mean, I know we talk a lot about camp, or one of the questions I had was about camp, and I hear fighters talk about going to camp. What does that kind of, like, from what you can tell us, what does that kind of encompass? Like, when fighters go into these training camps, like, what does that look like?
Well, you got to remember that whether it be MMA, kickboxing, boxing, jiu-jitsu, whatever, in MMA, it's multifaceted, right? It's a mixed energy sport. There's multiple modalities of training. There's multiple skill sets that you have to acquire, like you talked about. So training is omnipresent throughout the year. There's really no time off, right?
Yeah.
And it is, maybe the intensity is lower, but they're still going in there and they're still sparring and training with their teammates, because you may not have a fight, but your teammate does. So you have to get them prepared so that when you have a fight, they're going to help you. So it's a give and take type of deal. There's reciprocation. So with that being said, you always have to maintain some level of GPP, or general physical preparedness. And you also have to make sure that you're working on your limiters. Now, that could be your energy system limiters, or that could be your skill set limiters, that could be your strength limiters, whatever the case may be. We want to make sure that we're doing that off camp so that when they go into camp, we can hit the ground running, right? And you usually have about 8 weeks. That's like a standard time frame of fight camp preparation, right? So with that, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's 6 weeks. Sometimes it's 4 weeks. You know, ideally, you want to have 8 to 12 weeks. And so once you start camp, you should already have a foundation built in, right? You should already have great movement quality, right? You should have the structural integrity, and you should have a wide array of joint prerequisites so that when we throw in these tools or exercises, you're able to do that with the right amount of intensity and direction so that we can get the adaptations necessary. At some point, though, there's going to be a roadblock, and there's going to be some time where you have to deload, because not only are you weight training, conditioning, but you're also sparring, you're grappling, you're doing a lot of, you're probably dieting if you're weight cutting, right? So usually around 5 weeks out, now this is experience basis, anecdotal, but I do want to run a study on this, but primarily based off of 200 plus professional fighters that I've worked with personally, usually 5 weeks out is when we like to give them a structured deload. And that's because that's at that point, they've already been in camp 3 to 4 weeks, right? Been progressively intense. And then from there, the next 4 weeks are you're getting ready and prepared to go into the fight. So now, not only, you know, you're mentally fatigued and probably stressed out, right? If they're in the UFC, they're doing a shit ton of interviews. They're doing, you know, they're trying to get their weight down, so they're dieting hard. And then on top of that, sparring is more frequent. It's more intense. It's probably more volume. And so at that point, we like to give them a structured deload where I'll bring down the volume by about 60 to 50% overall. I'll probably keep the intensity fairly the same, maybe 10, 15% lower. But my goal is to get them prepared for the next 4 weeks, right? And now that is going to be your peaking phase. So usually 4 weeks out, now we're starting to work in more higher speed, more power work that is more catered to the speed of the sport, right? So now the domain and the actual power and training in the weight room is going to be based upon planes of motion, based upon rhythm, and based upon the actual energy systems that they're going to be really focused on inside the fight. This also has to do with their game plan, right? So, like, if they're very explosive and they're very muscular, like a Tyron Woodley back in the day when I used to work with him.
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, so Tyron was very explosive. Like, if you ever notice, it was like explode, recover, explode, recover. At that particular time, off camp, we want to work on his limiters, which is going to be, you know, aerobic capacity and the ability to deliver to that muscle that he had. So we would work on more aerobic capacity, aerobic power, more like marathon running and certain protocols that enhance cardiac output and blood flow. And then once we got into camp, especially getting closer to the fight, I wanted recoverability. I wanted repeatability. I wanted all that to be worked on at a higher volume set that was going to be either help him either go from 3 to 5 rounds, whatever he was fighting.
Right.
And so you work more so towards your compensators and your actual game plan getting closer to the fight. That's true specificity. So that's how it kind of – that's how it will look. And then 2 weeks out, we taper completely. The week out of the fight is primarily based on weight cut. And you'll probably do one speed work, you know, speed session, and then they'll just continue to cut the weight that week of the fight.
Yeah, this makes me, like, listening to you talk about it, it makes me appreciate I like people to talk to that talk crap. So it makes me appreciate the Muhammad Ali's Mike didn't really he was crazy, but he didn't really talk a lot. But and even Conor McGregor's, it makes me appreciate them being able to cut in a camp and go out there and put on a entertaining show in front of the cameras and then go back and do their business. So that's
well boxing you don't really have to cut a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So but yeah, like Conor, especially at 45, he had to cut.
Yeah.
Dustin has to cut weight up, you know. He has to cut a lot of weight. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a part of the process, right? Somebody cut 20 pounds, you know, 20, 30 pounds. And that's not ideal, but that's what I have to do in order to be competitive based upon, you know, the weight classes and stuff. And that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
There should be more weight classes in general, in my opinion. But, you know, you have to look at not only the diet, not only the training, not only beating your body up every day, but also if you're a high-level guy, you have to do interviews. Right. You have to do appearances. Right. You also have to prepare mentally for stepping in front of a cage or stepping in a cage in front of millions of people. Right. Either or, you know, on TV. And let's face it, it's a fight. Right. It's the most primal thing an individual can do.
Exactly.
Right? And if you lose a fight, it's a big ego killer. Right. And get humbled very quickly. And I think that when I started fighting. Right. I mean, listen, I wasn't the greatest kid. Right. I was getting into fights. I was doing, you know, things I shouldn't have been doing as a kid. When I started really training, all of that stuff, all that extracurricular stuff, you know, like at the end of the day, like, I'm not trying to fight you in a club. I'm not trying to fight you at the movies. I got to do this tomorrow with my with my boy. You know, and I'm like, I'm good. I already sparred today. I don't need to go through this. So I think in any situation, and you say like, you know, you have a respect for it, but like, I think any coach or anyone at all that wants to increase their confidence, right? Their level of understanding of who they are, right? Intrinsically. And check their ego. Go train. Go do jiu-jitsu, go do a boxing class, go do a Muay Thai class. I guarantee you your mind frame is going to change for the better, 100%.
Yeah, I've done a kickboxing class a couple of times, and man, my brain went before the body did. It's a different, I mean, it's not like, you know, in traditional, I say traditional sports like basketball, football more so, you can kind of, you go a play, you take a break. Basketball, yep. Somebody shooting the ball, you may be standing on the side catching your breath but while somebody else getting a rebound, then run back up the court. But like with fighting or any type of, I mean, I know I've done wrestling before. I've never been part of a grappling competition like that. But we had a coach at Tupelo. He was a wrestler. And man, I know I'm country. People be like, I say wrestle all the time. But I'm like, I can't. That's the way I can say it. Yeah. What's that? But yeah, he was a wrestler, And so he taught us how to do it. And so we did it kind of like as a conditioning thing. But man, it was something again, like my brain left and I was like, I really like, and it makes your body feel different. It's not like lifting weights or just going to another individual and just punching your hands and keeping them off of you. It's completely different than any, I don't really know another way to say it, but traditional sport, because you have to be aware of where your body is in space. You have to be aware of are you protecting yourself? How am I going to count? And then you have to use your brain to say, how am I counter this person while they're throwing a punch? And so it's so much going on. I think for the average person, that's 30 seconds. Like you're not going that far into it. But one thing I say, like that I like, and I want to ask you a question about it, is like, how was your transition going from fighter to trainer?
You know what? It was, so I'll give you the full rundown. So like I said, I was training people and coaching people while I was fighting, right? But I wasn't fully engulfed in it, right? Like I had a thriving business going. People loved to train with me, but at the same time, I wanted to be a high level fighter. You know what I mean? I was still pursuing my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point you go, well, what do you want to focus on? Cause it's hard to focus on so many different things, right? And mm-hmm. So many different things. So in MMA, you have to be all in. You really do, right? You can't dabble in it, you know? And so I remember I was working with a top level boxer at the time, and I was getting ready for a fight. I had a fight camp and he had a fight camp. We both were in camp together, but I was, right? And my MMA gym was away from my gym. And this is when like, I kind of was like, you know what? I need to bring my guys over to my gym and train because go from one session to another. And at this particular time, though, I had to go to jiu-jitsu. So I had to go to my jiu-jitsu gym. And then I was late to train this boxer, right? Who had, mm-hmm. I mean, he was fighting on ESPN. Like it was a big fight for him. And it was one of my biggest names at the time. And I was like, I was 24 years old. So it was new in my career. Like I've been coaching for 4 years, but he was probably my biggest athlete at that time, my most known athlete. Right. And he goes, man, listen. And I came late. And it was like, I was like 15, 20 minutes late, whatever. It wasn't a big deal. But it is a big deal when you're getting ready for a fight. And for me, it would have been a big deal regardless. To me in my head, though, I was like, yo, I'm 15 minutes late. I was just training. You should know how I feel. Like I'm cutting weight. You're cutting weight. Right. So in my mind, my 24-year-old mind, I'm like, why don't you get me? You should know this, you know? And then I remember him saying like, listen, bro, do you want to be a coach or do you want to be a fighter? Because you cannot be both in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 30. I think he was like 32 years old. He's been in the game for a long time. So he was kind of mentoring me a little bit too as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, at the time, I was like, man, whatever. Let's just get to work, you know? Then after, I sat down and I remember sitting on one of the benches in my gym and I go, and I started looking around. I go, man, I didn't want to hear that, but he's right. And I'm like, I need to figure out what's my focus point. And so at that particular time, I didn't want to give it up, right? I didn't want to give up my pursuit because it's been something that I've been pursuing for 4 years diligently every day, 2 to 3 times a day. I'm like, why am I going to give it up now? I'm fully healthy. And then I started bringing people over to my gym to train, and which helped a little bit. And I got people to come in and take some weight off of me with classes. And then I got a concussion. And this was probably somewhere around the 9th or 10th concussion that I've had throughout my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have more, but the ones that I can count.
Right.
And this is from football, playing football since I was 8 years old. And then now fighting, right? Had the concussion. I had 2 weeks to my fight. This is the same fight I was getting ready for. 2 weeks to my fight. And then I didn't recover. And I go, well, I can't fight. You know what I mean? And this was a good fight for me. Mm-hmm. So I went to the ran some tests. He said, listen, if you don't stop by the time you're 50, you're going to have Alzheimer's and it's not going to look good for you. So we need to figure it out. And it took me about a week to really like go, all right. And I had to talk to my coach, and you guys know who Dean Thomas is. He was one of my first MMA coaches, a UFC veteran. And he was just like, listen, if it was your knee or, you know, your even your back or something like that, we can kind of work around it, but it's your brain. You don't want to work around it. Mm-hmm. And long story short, I ended up retiring. And at that point, I was like, man, I don't want nothing to do with MMA. I don't want nothing to do with any of this. So I started doing bodybuilding, and I did a show. And then I was like, you know what? At that point, I was focused on just general population, but it wasn't enough. Like, it didn't fill a void for me.
Yeah.
Right? And I was still, like, I still had that itch to get back into fighting, but I knew that it was too soon. Like, I couldn't just get back into it. So I started training a little bit, and then I asked Dean Thomas again if he had any fighters that he would want me to work with, and that's when he said, you know, get your resume together, bring it to the top team, and see if you can start working with the high-level guys. It wasn't until then where I was like, you know what? This is a sign. It's a sign from God telling me that I need to focus on this particular thing that he has given me, you know, and the talent that has been given me just genetically, maybe whatever. But I knew that I was called to do that at that time. And I go, okay, you know what? Let's find a way to like really go in on this and pursue it 120%. And that's when that was that transition of like, all right, I still want to be an athlete. And don't get me wrong, I want to back to work on myself too as well, because it's important, right? You always have to stay, you always have to have that edge, I think, as a coach too as well, because the moment you lose that edge, you stop understanding it, right? So it's good to touch it, but don't let it get away from the people that you're working with. If that makes sense, because you have to be self. So, yeah, I think that was a turning point for me after that, and then going like, I have an opportunity to work with some of the best in the world. And at that place that I could live vicariously through them at that time, you know? Whereas, like, I knew that I was going to be able to sit cage side or be in the corner of a fight or a big boxing match or, you know, an ADCC trial or, you know, the Olympics, whatever it is, I was going to be there and I was going to have a part in it, but more so from a selfless act as opposed to a selfish act.
As a coach, continue to have that edge because it's needed to understand and coach your athletes through it is a big thing. I'll say, like, you know, going to the beginning of the podcast, you asked me about how I got into podcasting and things like that. Man, this is the first year. We're in 2024 now, but 2023 was the first year that I got back into training. I took a year off before that. And then even before that, I took another year off at another juncture within my career. And I can say that within that, it just was a loss of a loss of passion, one, for it. And then, you know, not seeing those results when you feel like you should, you know, as far as like a client base and things like that. And that kind of takes away some of the, took away some of the drive at that time. But, you know, February of 23, I decided to take a leap of faith. And so I jumped into this thing full time, 100%. I worked in medical sales before that. And I just walked away from my job and I was like, hey, I'm going to give it a go. 100%. And my wife now, which was my fiance at the time, she back gave me the backing that I needed. And that's where how we got to where we are today. And so I say that to say, you know, tie into like, anybody that's listening, at some point, whenever you going for whatever your dream is, whatever your passion is, it's going to be a point where you got to bounce back, where you got to take a shot. It may knock you on your butt. It may not, but you got to get back up and write your redemption story. And so I think that what you said is just a testament to that. And you know, that's beautiful, man. I mean, to transition it, and we never know how we can get that wake up call to like, hey, this is what you need to do. But yeah, to make that transition seamless, and then, like you said, just keep continue being able to continue living through your athletes is a big thing. That's what I do. I mean, I'm not a guy where I was able to be signed on as a 5-star athlete or play at some of these like the University of Alabama's and things like that. But I have guys that are able to do it, and so it brings me joy and excitement for them. I still get the same jitters that they do. Yeah. Before they go out there and perform, because I'm like, man, I know you feeling, but it also gives me that relatability to kind of be like Rocky's trainer in the corner, and things like that, where I'm like, hey, I can be that calming voice, or that voice that helps settle you down and say, hey, man, it's just, you know, you are who you are. This is just another day. And we're here to see you perform and do your thing. If y'all don't know, man, he gave me his time on his anniversary, his wedding anniversary. And so I'm going to ask you this question. How has your wife been able to inspire you to go beyond what you maybe thought you were capable of before?
She's my ultimate inspiration, literally. Like, it's one of those things where you go, well, if it's not good enough for her, then it ain't good enough for anybody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm out there trying to always impress her, you know, even though she thinks of me as the best out there. Like, she knew who I was and what I was capable of before even I knew what I was capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, she actually came when I opened up the first gym that I opened up at 22 years old. She was one of my first clients that walked in the door. Mm-hmm. And she heard me speak in front of, you know, in front of the people that were there. She was like, this kid's got something. And she's 8 years older than me. So she kind of like cradled, you know what I'm saying? But it was one of those things where I was like, she had every opportunity to like be like, you know what? This kid is younger than me. You know, he's got a lot going on. But like, she knew that I had something in me that, like I said, I didn't even know. So every time I go out there, every time I go to work, every day I wake up, every time I go on trips and I go to these seminars and I'm teaching nonstop, it's really all for her and for my family. And mm-hmm. So she's, again, my ultimate inspiration and my why on what I do every day, you know? Right. And then for that, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I've been married for 12, well, I've been with her for 12 years, right? I've been married for 6. And every day is a new opportunity to fall back in love. You see what I'm saying? And so mm-hmm. I try to give her as much as possible each and every day. And sometimes, you know, it's hard because you get tired, right? Mm-hmm. I got a lot of things going on, right? But it don't matter if she's not happy, because if she's not happy, I'm not happy. You know what I'm saying? She has to be a priority. And like I said, whenever I do something, whenever I go and travel, it's one of those things where I keep it with me all the time.
I just recently got married in October of 23. And so, man, I appreciate it, man. It's been a great journey. And I can say, man, it's the biggest thing for me was, you know, she actually inspired me to get back out there and do it, because I wouldn't. Man, I was like, I moved and I was like, I'm done. I moved from North Mississippi to South Mississippi. And I was like, man, I'm done with it. I really don't care. But man, it's just like, she could hear me talk about sports and knew that it was still there. Man, this guy ain't, man, you know, this, that, and the third. And so, you know, she just kind of nudged me into it. And then I just finally won that, because I had sold a lot of my training equipment and everything like that, or given it away. And man, I had like, I always kept one bag of stuff. I was like, I'm gonna keep these items just in case, you know, like rainy day, I'm gonna keep them just in case I ever want to do it again. And man, she just reminded me of myself and reminded me of who I am. And it's been a journey. It hadn't been easy, but you know, I wouldn't choose to go to war with anybody else by my side. So man, we hopefully have some little ones at some point and go from there. But man, I think
I said that's gonna change the game for you.
Well, I think that's gonna be nice, man. I appreciate the time. I ain't gonna hold you too long. I think we've been on about 54 minutes, so I'll wrap it up here.
All good, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh yeah, man. I'm definitely had to keep in touch with you some way or keep up with you. I'm gonna buy a Type A shirt and all that too, man.
Yeah, I got you. I'll send it over. She'll send it over for you.
So I'm gonna ask you this question. We'll say, as a coach, we've talked about being an athlete, but as a coach, I got this from Les Spellman. Hopefully I can get him on a podcast sometime soon. Would you rather be, and he said his trainer asked him this question, would you rather be the butcher or the surgeon as a coach?
In my early career, I would say a butcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm more of a surgeon. And let's take it a little bit step further. I'm a general, right?
Yeah.
So I organize the training process. I oversee the systems. I put together the protocols. And then I allow my coaches to go out there, my field generals, to take over the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
take over the field. And the goal, the ultimate goal, when you're looking at any outcome, is to be successful, right?
Right, but right.
It's also the process, right? So learning through certain situations, evolving as an individual along the path to success. So for me at the moment, being 15 years in, it's been nonstop, you know? So my goal now is to be more of that precise technician, mm-hmm. right? Oversee the entire system. And then when you can look up and all around, right? When I have clear vision on the entire setup, now I can pinpoint and accurately place the right things in order for that success. So I think
that's the answer. I think he said the same thing, and I'll probably say at this point I'm working on being a surgeon of it. I'll say, like, early in my coaching career, man, I did things I don't even have. I wish I would have kept notes when I was younger, just to go back and see like exactly what I was on. But just me thinking of it, I had this conversation with my wife the other day. I was like, man, I did stuff, and I had this conversation with Coach Beckham as well. I said, I did stuff that, man, it worked. It didn't make sense, though. I said, I just did it because I was a believer in hard work, or I just felt like it made sense. I said, it wasn't anything scientific. It wasn't anything that I read in a paper. It was just straight up like, hey, I like this. Let's do this. Now, some of it was crazy. I'm frying central nervous systems everywhere. But at the end of the day, hey, they were my guinea pigs, and it worked out. But I think that as you progress in any career, it's the same thing. We talk about the greats. You look at Kobe, you look at Jordan. Regardless of what y'all say, you look at LeBron and you say, these guys at the beginning of the career, they come in, they're dunking the ball. It's all athleticism. I'm just more athletic than you. Yeah. And once they get towards the end of their career, it's more IQ. It's more of, I'm going to pick my spots, and then that's when I'm attacking. Like, I watch games now, and I'm like, you know, I can appreciate the game versus when I was younger. Like, because when I was younger, I was like, man, why isn't he just shooting the ball? Just play all four quarters and just go hard all four quarters. But now it's like, all right, my team needs me in this five-minute slot. My team needs me in this moment and these spots. And I think once you get to that level, now you're at a mastery level. Like you said, now you're a general, and you're able to look at it and execute at a high level. And I'll say this for everybody that has followed me on TikTok. It was one of the first videos I did on TikTok, because I got on it last year and it blew up. But last year, my thing was execution. That was my word for the year. And I delivered on that word. I held myself to that word of just executing everything that we want to do here in Legends of Athletics and executing it at the best that we could. And this year, the word is intention. I want to be intentional in everything that I do. I want to go at it, not just haphazard or just execute it because it needs to be done and going through the motions, but I want to be intentional in everything that we do. And this podcast is one of those things. And so, Coach Daru, I appreciate you and your time, man. Especially today, giving me the time and talking to this dude from Mississippi, this country dude that say wrestling. I hope to hear from you soon. Anything else you wanted to say?
Appreciate you taking the time and reaching out. So we'll do more. And whenever you're in Florida, man, let me know. Come through.
Yeah, man, I have to come through, man. I'm a chop some weight before I get there, though, because I ain't about to get killed. I had to do a workout, man. I would love to, like I said, man, I love seeing your workouts, man. I think the thing that really attracted me the most, this is like coaches speak, but like your coaching cues, man, you are a phenomenal communicator. And it's like right down to earth to where your athletes and your clients can understand what you're saying. And so that's one of the biggest things I took from you.